From the land of Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of July, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from agmarket.net. I'll update you on some of the news for the day, and then we'll turn our attention to meat snacks and how they're really having a moment. And it may be more than that over time, as GLP-1 drugs have been driving some of the demand for those products in the grocery store. Then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast as we wrap up our time together. We'll talk with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December and March corn finished lower today, down 3.25 in the December at 468.5. The March at 484.5, 2.75 lower. November beans, 1188.75. The settlement price down 4. And December wheat, soft red, up 3.75 cents at $6.81.5. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace on a Thursday afternoon. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about conditions on the ground on your farm there, about an hour to the south of us here in Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, everything's hanging in there fairly well. We haven't caught a whole lot of rain. We're on the dry side. You know, our yards aren't hurting too bad yet, which tells me my corn's probably not hurting too bad. The corn in the field, you can tell where there was some stress, you know, from water and whatnot. Otherwise, pretty good color. I've got to think that we'll be in good shape if we go ahead and catch this rain they're talking about for the weekend. You know, I don't know that it's going to be a record crop by any means for most people, but I do think that there'll be some awfully good corn around. Now, beans, on the other hand, you know, a lot of these beans went in the ground in early April. Yes, in some places they were stressed by water, but a lot of these beans, you know, were flowering by summer solstice, and the beans I've been in are potted pretty good. I feel really good about them, but yeah, we have to get some moisture because, you know, as we all know, the next couple, 3 weeks are super important, but I feel good about everything. But I'll tell you what, if we would miss all the rains this weekend, it would be a kick in the gut for sure. So we got to hope that we can finally break through there.
Yeah, those rains are expected to be 1 to 2 inches, pretty widespread across the whole of the corn belt. Has anybody been calling in saying, hey, my corn just doesn't, it's just not there. It's just not looking that good.
Yeah. Northwestern Iowa, there's a lot of growers in northwestern quadrant of Iowa, which is very interesting. If you look at the map on distribution for rainfall, you get into southeastern South Dakota, and some of those guys have had plenty, and it's almost like when you cross the state line, it just gets pretty rough. In that part of the world, they're screaming for moisture. You get into a lot of North and South Dakota both, of course, outside of that eastern part of South Dakota. You know, and it's problematic because not only have they been dry, you know, they've been excessively hot. I mean, every day, the last several days, they've been hotter than we've been in central Illinois. So it's really been an interesting weather pattern that we've been looking at. And the tough thing for a lot of those folks, especially in North Dakota, you know, is that they've not only had 100-degree heat, you know, probably, for highs, a lot of areas, I'd say 8 out of the last 15 days, you know, they've also had 30-mile-an-hour winds on several of those days. So we've talked to a fair amount of growers in that part of the world that don't, you know, they just don't feel like too much hope as far as their corn crop's concerned. So there's definitely some areas that have massive issues, and those would be a couple of the three areas that I think are most important right now, at least in my book.
As it happens, Jason Winter from Columbia Grain International, it's an elevator system that services the West Coast. He's located between Jamestown and Fargo in North Dakota. We'll join you and Chip Nellinger for the Commodity Week program later this afternoon. I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. Tell me about the marketplace today and the calm that we've had after a fairly vicious move to the downside, particularly for soybean.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, of course, Monday's trade was rough. Tuesday, we kind of rebounded. Wednesday's trade was rough. Beans have definitely taken it on the chin here this week. We came in here today, and we actually traded higher at one point. But unfortunately, you know, November beans closed around a dime off the highs. And so, you know, you just go back to Friday, and good Lord, on Friday, we made a high of 1256.5 on November beans, and it looks like we're going to close here today about 1288.5. So, you know, you're looking at a solid almost 70-cent drop there in the course of four trading sessions. So, you know, it's been rough to say the least, and there's no question in my mind that the massive culprit, if you will, is, of course, weather. Obviously, we came into July, all kinds of moisture. July was certainly on the drier bias. Topsoil moisture indicators look pretty ugly, you know, whenever you look at them. Moisture over the last 14 days, those maps have looked very ugly as well, you know, but it certainly looks like this bean crop has a chance to catch a lifeline here, and the market's paid close attention to that, and that's the biggest reason for the sell-off here.
What are you going to be watching as we move from the end of the month of July into August?
Yeah, I mean, you know, whenever you look, for instance, over on the corn side of things, I mean, obviously the month of June was very kind to the corn market. After that NAST report at the end of June, we've done nothing but to have a really nice uptrend here. Now today, you know, you kind of closed on that 200-day moving average, closed at the low of the day, and really about 7 cents off the high. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see, do some of these people take a few more of those profits off the table? Because anybody who got long this market, yeah, there was some short covering, no doubt, because the funds had built a short. But there was also some people that came in and took long positions. You know, are they going to take off those positions going into the end of the month? And I certainly think that that's a possibility. But we're going to be watching closely, just as everyone else is. You know, how well did these models verify this time around? Because, you know, GFS has been awfully abundant in rainfall forecasts here over the last couple of weeks, and not many of those have verified. But one thing that you could say now is that it seems like the models are in pretty much agreement that we're going to get a fair amount of moisture. So, you know, if we do get that and it verifies, I would assume starting out the month, it's going to be really tough to resume the kind of rally action we saw there last week anyway.
Thanks much. We'll talk to you for Commodity Week.
Absolutely. Thank you, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman John Bozeman says he hopes to hold a farm bill markup next Thursday as negotiations continue on key provisions. The Arkansas Republican says discussions are ongoing with Senate Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, including a Democratic proposal to delay a state cost share requirement for the SNAP, or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Well, USDA is providing farmers with greater certainty when making land management decisions by updating guidance on certified wetland determinations. The NRCS, or the Natural Resources Conservation Services, has issued an interim final rule stating that most wetland determinations made since November 28, 1990 will be considered certified if producers were notified of the decision and given appeal rights. NRCS Chief Colton Buckley says the change gives producers confidence when planning field improvements and other operations. And finally today, farmland sales have been steady in recent years with values holding well, but there are signs that market may be shifting. Mike Davis has more.
Colton Lucena, Vice President of Real Estate with Farmers National Company, says it's economically driven.
Land values have been holding really resilient. Supply has been down. I would say over the last 3 years, we've been holding pretty consistently at 20% off of what we would consider an average supply line. And demand has held right in there and hung strong, which has kept prices very stable.
Lucena says now there are indicators that the upcoming busy season might bring with it a jump in the amount of land on the market.
We're starting to prepare for what is our sale season, which is, you know, the end of August, September, October, November. And the pipeline is starting to fill up and fill up rather quickly. So I do anticipate we're going to see probably closer to back to an average supply going into the 26 sales season.
He says while localized factors are often the driver, early season sales thus far have been strong. I'm Mike Davis.
And I'm Todd Gleason. That's a look at today's agricultural news. If you've been to the store, you know that proteins are having a snack moment in the marketplace. Abby Groves is a livestock economist at CoBank, and she sat down with my NAFB colleague, farm broadcaster Kylie Allen, to discuss a new report from CoBank's Knowledge Exchange. As you'll hear, the economist says meat snacks are becoming a thing. Here's Kylie Allen with more.
Well, let's start talking about some of that demand. What's the demand for meat snacks?
Well, we've really seen it grown over the past 4 or 5 years now, based on Circana sales data, even just on a dollar basis. I mean, it's grown 45% up to, it's a $4.4 billion category now, which is pretty exciting. And we see a lot of growth in demand from younger consumers, as well as those that are on GLP-1 weight loss drugs, but just your average consumer in general, that they're really looking for protein, of course, is the absolute name of the game at this point and has been for the past couple of years. We expect that trend to continue, but also having foods that are clean label, that are healthy, that you recognize what the ingredient label means. And if they're high in protein and have all of those things, then that is like the gold star related snack. So we've seen meat snacks perform really well lately, and we expect that trend to continue to grow over time.
Well, you alluded to my next question there. Protein, name of the game. And
yes.
We're seeing more and more people looking for it in the grocery stores. You say we expect that demand to continue?
Yeah, we absolutely do. I mean, we've seen immense growth, not even just in meat snacks. We've seen it in dairy. We've seen it across all of the animal protein. So beef, pork, poultry, even lamb and some exotic meats are doing well at the grocery store, that we're seeing year over year sales growth. So that's always really encouraging, that you have consumers that are really seeking out protein, but also from its true original source. And so being able to see consumers kind of gravitate towards protein, but from the natural source, is always nice to see. But it's a long-term trend rather than just a short-term fad.
Well, you mentioned earlier that we're seeing some of this demand grow into different demographics. Where are we seeing it expand?
So I mentioned a little bit earlier with younger consumers and with GLP-1 users. So I'll kind of break those into two segments. So first, with the younger consumers, thankfully with meat snacks, they are most often found, especially with like the sticks rather than jerky, as just a single serve option. So you can grab a meat stick out of the pantry and you can go to school, you can go to soccer practice, or have that as a little like protein boost after for a recovery snack. So we've seen younger consumers really latch onto those. Also, that it's simple and you don't have to refrigerate it, very much an on the go, very convenient option. So younger consumers are really enjoying meat snacks. The other side of the demand that we've really started to see grow is the GLP-1 users. Honestly, for some of the same reasons. One, that it's a single serving package that they're searching for, instead of eating a full meal, that we find them snacking more, partially because their appetite has been reduced. So the meat snack is super easy. Also, that it's high in protein, it's low in calories, you have a simple ingredient legend. And so for those consumers that are counting calories or being more mindful of their eating and looking for high protein, that meat snacks are a great option for them, but that they aren't overeating or wasting a meal because they could just go to this kind of snack. So that's been two really highlighted areas for meat snacks recently.
Well, and as we see this demand continue to grow, is that creating a new market opportunities? And are we seeing companies grow to meet those demands?
Absolutely. So I mentioned at the very beginning that beef absolutely dominates with meat snacks. And, you know, we've of course heard all over the media, we have tight cattle supplies, but demand for beef is super strong. And so this has really brought the opportunity for other animal protein or livestock species to kind of play in the game a little bit. So we've seen different products like chicken sticks or ready-to-eat bacon has become super popular. And so these are some other ways that other animal protein species have been able to compete in the meat snack category. And it's just widening the opportunity for consumers to have as many options as they could potentially choose from in the grocery store. Not that they don't already have a ton already, but that's been a nice way for them to be able to expand. And then I'm sure that as those products and that innovation really comes online, that that will further open new markets to other consumers.
Bouncing off of that, Abby, are there any implications for meat snacks?
Right now at this time is more so of like what's going on in the cattle space, that there's competition amongst all of the beef processors and manufacturers to be able to find cattle. And so that could potentially cause supply restrictions down the line with regards to beef related meat snacks. But again, this offers the opportunity for the other livestock species. And one of the other things that we haven't talked about yet that we did mention in our report was the amount of investment that's going into meat snack processing. So across the entire animal protein portfolio, we have over $8 billion in the past 5 or 6 years that's being invested into making or building new processing plants. And approximately $1 billion of that is solely related to meat snacks. And so, again, this is something super positive that if there is investment going into processing, that means that we'll have more meat snack products available in the near future. And this will be great to be able to grow demand and get consumers eating more protein coming directly from a meat source.
Abby Prinz-Groves joins us, a livestock economist from CoBank. More details and the report itself can be found at cobank.com. I'm Kylie Allen.
Our thanks go again to Kylie Allen. She's at the Midwest Farm Report Radio Network. That's out of Madison, Wisconsin. She was speaking with Abby Grove. She's a livestock economist at CoBank. If you'd like to see the report, it's titled Protein's Promise for Meat Snack Growth. Go to cobank.com. Look under research, and you should find it under animal proteins. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Let's turn our attention now to the growing regions across the planet. The CEO and president of T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online now joins us. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Todd. Thanks a lot for having me.
Hey, tell me about this last couple of weeks in the weather and how you assess its impact or what's been happening across the Corn Belt.
Well, it's rather fascinating to watch because the last 15 days have really turned dry and pretty warm. If you look at rainfall over the last 15 days and compare it to the last 48 years of record, about 80% of the U.S. corn and soybean crops were drier than normal. That's exceptionally high. We can look back in time, and the only real years that stick out and join with it are some of the bad years, like 1983, 1991, things like that. But here's the thing, that's only looking at it over the last 15 days. If we broaden it out a little bit and look at it over the last 30 days, it's not quite as alarming, but it's still a concern. About 55% of U.S. corn and soybeans were drier than normal over that period, and that ranks around number 5 to number 8 driest over the last 30 days, again, going back to 1979. So this just shows you that what we're going through now is a little bit unusual, and of course you may have noticed that when you saw the condition ratings this week. They dropped 4 points for corn and 3 points for soybeans. That's the proportions that were rated good and excellent. And that's just all related to this. This lack of rain is starting to affect the crops. And on top of that, temperatures have been very warm over the last 30 days as well. Also ranking around number 5 warmest going back 48 years.
When you look forward, do things change?
Well, this is where everything is turning even more interesting. There's an unusual system that's forming today in South Dakota, and that's going to move across the Corn Belt over the next 3 days. Now, normally at this time of the year, you just see a wave of energy or some kind of small system pass, and that'll generate a big thunderstorm cluster here and there, kind of what we were seeing earlier in the summer. But what's going to happen with this system is that it turns pretty strong for late July and early August standards, and that will generate a pretty big shield of rain starting later today in South Dakota and then moving directly across the Corn Belt all the way into Saturday. Now, it's a little bit tricky to figure out how much rain is going to happen, but the one thing we must note is that most of these computer models are bringing out some pretty big totals. Widespread rainfall of 1 to 2 inches is indicated for most of the Corn Belt crop from this event, and several models bring down more than 3 inches in different parts of Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and South Dakota. So this just gives you some idea of what we're looking at. Now, if this happens, which we think it probably will in some fashion, it's always hard to say if you're going to see a widespread 1-inch rain or a 2-inch rain, which would be a pretty big anomaly to the wet side. But either way, it's going to take down all these dryness numbers, and it should stabilize things. So by the time we get into the weekend, things should be looking quite a bit better for corn and soybeans with some better soil moisture in place than we have today.
That'll put us into the month of August. Have you been thinking about what that looks like?
Well, we can see that the first 5 days or so are going to be pretty much close to normal. Temperatures will be in the 70s and 80s for highs, with lows in the 60s and 70s. So kind of topping or kind of just staying pretty close to normal, maybe a little bit on the cool side. After that, this is where we have to watch the next set of events. The big upper level high that produced a pretty severe heat wave over the last few weeks out in the plains and western Corn Belt, that is going to re-emerge in the southern U.S. Now, whether or not it builds northward and envelops a lot of corn and soybeans, or if it just kind of stays to the south, remains to be seen. The most likely scenario is for some of the southern and western corn and soybean crops to tap into some heat 1 to 2 weeks out, while northern or eastern crops end up being closer to normal. But either way, we don't think we're going to see the ideal scenario of widespread coolness. There should be a little bit of heat once again in August, and that would, again, be kind of a limiting factor for yield potential for corn and soybeans. Some storms should be around with this setup, especially sometime around a week from now, around Thursday, where we see some type of system move through that should cause warmer air to shift northward. And as long as that happens, we'll see some more storms. But overall, Todd, it's still a little bit difficult to pinpoint how it's going to look over the month of August, except that at least initially, it looks a little bit cool and a little bit dry, then a little bit warmer and wetter. But we still have a long ways to go before the crop's in the bin.
Indeed we do. Hey, thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
That sounds great.
That's Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online and serves as the CEO, president, and primary meteorologist. You can catch him each and every Thursday right here on the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org. Make sure you check out our calendar of events while you're on that homepage. You can also listen to the podcast directly from there or just search out the Closing Market Report by name in your favorite podcast applications. Those include Spotify and Apple, as well as YouTube. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.